Welcome back to the Triple Threat Podcast. My name is William Yuzel, and I apologize for the technical delays. We've had some internet issues going on, and we just want to apologize for the late start, and I also want to apologize if we haven't uploaded the past couple of days. I went out of town, and that's pretty much it. So let's get straight into this one. So we've got a lot of games to go through. We've got not just the last four games, we've got two games on the Jazz series we've got to get to this time. So let's get straight into this one, but before we do, if you comment in the chat, we'll make sure to answer it. We'll get your questions answered, and feel free to subscribe. And with that being said, let's get straight into it. So, what series do you want to hit first?
You know what? Let's actually hit Bucks Nets, just because Game 4, which is really pivotal for the Bucks, is tonight. So, just a couple of takeaways from Game 3, because it was a completely different basketball game. The Bucks definitely played better, and this really started with Giannis and Middleton. They combined for 68 of their 86 points. Middleton, like we said earlier, needed to step up, and what did he do? He dropped an efficient 35, so he definitely stepped up there. However, I think offensively, their role players really need to do a better job, because 18 points inefficient, 18 points for that matter, well, does not cut it against a Brooklyn team that was simply having basically an off night.
A very off night, which the one they still could have won that game easily with the chance to win the game. And
yeah,
Brown just
layup.
Not great.
But I think that we still have to give credit to Milwaukee's defense. Mike Budenholzer did a really good job of containing the role players. Blake had 5 points. Joe Harris had 3 points, 1 for 11 shooting. Claxton had 2. Mike James had 2. Shamet had 3. And so I think Budenholzer's adjustments really made a crucial difference, because it's very rare when you hold the Brooklyn Nets, who have a historically great offense, to only 83 points. And then Bruce Brown, he did step up, drop 16, but it's only one guy, and when the rest are scoring 5 points and under, you know you have a very good sign, because Bruce Brown, Kyrie having an off night, and KD shooting 11 for 28, that's just not going to cut it against a very good Bucks team. And so now it's really up to Game 4. Milwaukee has to win this at home if the series wants to be competitive, and this will be a big test to see if Giannis will ever win a title with this current Milwaukee team, or even in Milwaukee, or if it's time for him to find a new home.
Yeah, so let's just hit a little more Brooklyn stuff here. They just didn't hit it from three. I think it was maybe 7 made threes all game. Just eight it was. Just that is not, you're not going to hit see the Brooklyn that's shooting 25% from three. That's not going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And just to add on to that, they had 4 shots within 2 feet of the basket. 4 made shots. Like,
yeah.
If Brooklyn's off night is that atrocious without one of their 3 best players, a top 10 player in the league, and you won that game by a skin of your teeth, it's not a great sign.
No.
I thought that, question, what is P.J. Tucker's role on offense? Stand in the corner and just pass the ball when he gets passed to? Like,
he's basically a bailout.
He's not adding anything.
No.
He's playing way too much for some defensive presence, and I think that you could get a lot better option than, like, I mean, I could do P.J. Tucker's role on offense. He stood in the corner. If he gets passed to, he just immediately swings it back out to someone else. Like, anyone can do that, so I was just really unimpressed with what P.J. Tucker did. But, yeah, Giannis really stepped up. I thought his job in the paint and post was really exceptional. I thought that Milton did a good job getting into that mid-range area. And they really took over from the corners. They really tried to thrive in that high post area. And, I mean, they were also not efficient from three. I think they were less than 20%. So,
yeah,
they also had a very off night, and I think that they really have to figure out what their game plan is going forward, because either they need to realize that they're not gonna shoot with the Brooklyn Nets and they gotta take the game in the paint, or they're gonna try to fix something in terms of their spacing to get open shots for. I mean, they've got some shooters on that team. They've got players that can shoot, but I think this team's gonna win in the paint in the post, and I just think shooting 31 threes is just not efficient for them. You gotta know your system, know your strengths and weaknesses, and the Bucks really haven't done that on offense yet. I think they really did a good job adapting defensively and being able to stop Durant and Irving without Harden. But if Harden comes back and if they don't adjust, I think this series is over pretty much. Because if they got one lucky win with a very off night, I mean, they had an off night too, but
Yeah,
not a great game.
definitely an offensive off night, but I think Harden is out game four, which is a good thing for Milwaukee, obviously. So they know what to do defensively. The home crowd should be really involved. You gotta have a great atmosphere. That's one really underrated thing about playoff basketball that I kind of forgot in the bubble, how much that atmosphere matters. But yeah, PJ Tucker with 0 points, Lopez with 1 of 5 three-point shooting and only 3 points is not gonna cut it, even though he had 6 blocks, pretty good or very good. But Holiday, he is the sir, like he's the bona fide third option. 4 for 14, only 9 points. So Milwaukee hits their stride offensively and retains the good defense. I think they should definitely be able to beat Brooklyn. They can be able to beat Brooklyn, but it's more of if the shots will fall, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I just think it'd be hard for Milwaukee to win this game when their bench consists of Bobby Portis, Ben Forth, Pat Connaughton, and Giannis' little brother who just played maybe, what, 30 seconds in the third? Like, Thanasis is not doing it, man. I think that they have no depth on this roster, and I think a lot of that is to do with the Jrue Holiday trade. Yeah, they got a third option. I mean, man, fourth quarter, I mean, that's where he showed up, making that clutch basket to seal the win. But I think that this team has got to be more consistent throughout the game. They started the game off on fire in the first quarter, really took it to Brooklyn. They were up like 31-9 at some point. Second quarter got smoked. They just have to play more team-oriented basketball and just play more consistent together. And they gotta give their stars some breaks. I think Jrue Holiday played like all the first, all the fourth, and pretty much I think played like what, 42 minutes. They got no depth. A team that's this inconsistent with no depth, there's just a recipe for disaster. Even if they somehow take this series, there's no chance they get it past either Atlanta or Philadelphia. Just
Okay, they
they'll be
might,
gassed. They'll be gassed.
but definitely not Philadelphia.
Definitely Philadelphia.
Yeah, not loving everything from Milwaukee. I think Brooklyn just had an off night and they'll need to step up, especially the role players once again. But let's move on to probably the most unentertaining game or unentertaining series. That is Suns Nuggets. And I would say my favorite thing about game three was the Suns fan, right? He's getting heckled by two Nuggets fans. So what does he do? Haymaker, haymaker, left jab, right hook, just goes. Just breaks this Nuggets fan's nose and then says Suns in four. That was by far the most entertaining thing I've seen all night.
Well, it's certainly
But
not the game.
yeah. But on a serious note, Jokic, 30-20-10, one of three players to do that, extremely impressive. But the rest of the offense was severely lacking. I know Monte Morris had like 19-20 points and MPJ added another 15. But against the Phoenix Suns, who might be the best offense in the playoffs right now, that's just not going to cut it at all. And so the Suns killed it once again. And unlike the Bucks, they had 10 players contributing in over 10 minutes per game. And so they have the star power, Chris Paul, who is on demon time, Devin Booker, 28. They have all of this depth and excellent coaching. And I don't see a single team in the West that can match that. Like, they've gotten lucky facing the Nuggets and the Lakers, to be honest.
Imagine saying that at the beginning of the season. Imagine saying they got lucky facing the Lakers and the Nuggets in the playoffs.
But they were injury depleted. Like, there's no there's no Jamal, there's no or Will Barton was back, but he actually had a pretty decent game, but no Jamal, no Harper Hempel. That's tough for Denver offensively. And when your next best creators are Monte Morris and Michael Porter Jr. against such a versatile, switchable team, that's, I just can't see them winning this. I think that it's going to be a sweep.
I mean, I don't think it's lucky that they've faced these two teams. I think they're just this good. I think that
they're good, but like, they're lucky that Jamal got injured. They're lucky that AD.
You're telling me that Jamal would have made any of these games closer than 15 points? I mean, they've been blown out every game. They've been smoked every game this series. Like, I don't think one player. I mean, Jamal Murray, he's good and all. He's not like a top 5 point guard. He's not going to change the whole game, especially not defensively.
Not defensively, but offensively. Like, this team without him is so depleted offensively in terms of scoring and playmaking, I think that they'd be able to take maybe one game. Like, I regardless of Jamal, I would still have the Suns in 5 or 6, but I think without him, it's a sweep, for sure.
Yeah, but let's talk about what the Suns did that just makes them such a great team going forward. So, just Chris Paul's smarts, man. Jokic, great player. Defensively, he can be a bit of a liability. I mean, he's an average defender. But what he doesn't do is he doesn't close out, and that's what Chris Paul took advantage of. So he just got right up 5 feet in front of Jokic in the mid range and just pulled up. Because what? If Jokic wasn't going to close out on him. Wasn't going to do anything.
He was doing his thing, pulling up, and then working off some of those screens with Ayton, because Ayton does have that strength advantage over Jokic. And it's tough for Jokic to defend him. So I think another big advantage that they had, because DeAndre had 15 boards and 10 points, but was a plus 18 and plus 18 plus minus. And Chris Paul just in the pick and roll, being able to either pull up or take a floater and have Jokic kind of attack him, or Jokic goes all in on Chris Paul, you can just dish it out to DeAndre Ayton. So I think that they've let Jokic do his thing on offense, and that means Mike Malone keeps him in longer, but they exploit his defensive woes.
I think the craziest thing about Jokic last night is the fact that he had 10 offensive boards, 10 assists, 32 points, only 2 turnovers, and was still a minus 10. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, this is how badly the Nuggets are getting smacked. Jokic could have an all-time game, and he'll still be doing poorly because the Suns are just whooping him so, so poorly. Like, the Suns, they don't miss. Like, their ball movement is incredible. Their trust and camaraderie is great. They don't turn it over. I mean, their effective field percentage has been like 60% every single game.
Top 5 offense, top 5 defense.
They've been shooting lights out every single game. It's not an outlier. They just shoot this well. Like, they get good opportunities and they take great shots. They got great shot selection. The Suns, man. If they don't make it out of the West, I'll be surprised. Honestly, I think they've actually got a good shot of winning this whole thing. Like,
I think so too.
This isn't just a Miami Heat team that can make it to the finals just because of the conference that they're in and the situation that they were dealt. This team is actually built to win a championship.
Mm-hmm. And Chris Paul is hungry to get back into the conference finals for the second time in his career. And I think he has a better shot of coming out than he did in Houston.
Okay, that Houston team was very unlucky. They could have made it out of the conference so many times.
Would have, except for when he got hurt. And then they all went and they should, like, missed 27 straight threes.
27 straight is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
From, like, one of the best shooting teams of all. That was crazy.
If they just made 2 of those, they would have won that game.
Yeah, PJ Tucker bringing that same energy to Milwaukee, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else you want to hit on this game?
Let's take a look at. What did you say?
I said, anything else you want to hit in this game?
Not really. I'd say let's take a look at 76ers Hawks. So once again, it was a pretty tight game at the end of the third until Philly went on that just crazy run. And then Doc Rivers, late in the game, once again showed why he's the superior coach, completely outcoaching Nate McMillan, who is a good coach in his own right. But I think let's talk about Atlanta's defense, first of all. Philly had so many perimeter creators, Embiid, Harris, Curry, Korkmaz, Milton, Simmons to an extent, that it was really overwhelming for Atlanta, whose defensive production normally comes on the interior with Collins and Capella. Having Capella fade out to the perimeter is just, that's tough to watch. And then we lost our best perimeter defender in DeAndre Hunter. So there's not really anybody that can neutralize or stop all this creation. And speaking of Capella, just getting shut down offensively by Embiid's perimeter game, or getting shut down defensively by Embiid's perimeter game. He's having to close out, he's having to fade out, and then that opens a space for a cutter to maybe come into the paint and get an easy bucket. Because Collins is also out on the perimeter guarding Tobias Harris. So they're not really, the two big time rim protectors are not even there to protect the rim anymore. And Solomon Hill, who is DeAndre Hunter's replacement, has been fully incompetent and needs to get out of the starting lineup immediately because I think he had 0 point, no, he had 1 point, one singular point, and then let Tobias Harris run all over him. So I think DeAndre Hunter's loss is really, really severely missed. He's respectable as a 3 point shooter. He is a very good defender, very versatile defender, and Solomon Hill cannot replace that production. So we're gonna have to make some kind of change, maybe run small with like Trey, Dunn, Bogey, but I don't even like that. That does not seem great either. But we need to do something because defensively, Philly's been way too overwhelming. Then on the offensive end, Philly's length and versatility, man. I feel like we mentioned it, but we underestimated it. Your guy Matisse, Simmons, even Tobias Harris, jumping passing lanes, getting steals, and then excelling back in transition. And a lot of that comes from exploiting some of the weaknesses in our second unit. Guys like Lou Williams not always having the best shot selection. Guys like Onyeka Okongwu with no experience, or Gallinari at times, Bruno Fernando, Tony Snell. It's a solid second unit, but it's not great. And I think that Philly on defense is taking full advantage of that. And then I guess I don't want to say it, but it looks like Philly in five or six.
Yeah, it's
With
starting to look that
the way
way.
that the coaching is right now, I don't think we'll be able to stop this with Hunter being hurt.
And you can really see that lack in coaching because or that discrepancy in coaching ability because what Philly did is they came out after the half and played exceptionally well. They had a great offensive adjustment from the half and just went on a tear. You gotta give credit to Korkmaz. Korkmaz had a really, really solid game. He stepped in after Danny Green got hurt, came in with that starting spot in the second half, and he played exceptionally well in that third quarter. So I think that was something that really was underappreciated in this game is how well he played. What did you think of Korkmaz's performance?
I think in the first half, he was just on fire. Nobody could really stop him. And my fear was that he was turning into the Shake Milton from the game before. So it just shows that one of these role players on Philadelphia, whether it's Curry, Korkmaz, Milton,
Dwight Howard.
I was talking about the perimeter, but yes, Dwight Howard for sure. Yeah, Dwight. Yeah. Funny, funny. But one of these guys steps up. Exploits Atlanta's lack of perimeter defense, and just really destroys us. So I think we have a lottery protected pick. Atlanta does. I think it's Cleveland's or maybe OKC's, one of the two. Hopefully we can get around, not lottery protected, top five protected. Hopefully we get around like six, seven, draft a Scotty Barnes or a Moses Moody, someone like that can come in and really boost his perimeter defense, because you cannot win against these offensive powerhouses without good perimeter defense. One elite rim protector will not cut it. And if you look at Utah, it's some of the best perimeter defense in the league. If you look at Phoenix, Bridges, Crowder, Paul, some of the best perimeter defense. If you look at even Philly, excellent perimeter defense. And Milwaukee, excellent perimeter defense as well. So that is one thing that we really, really need to emphasize, and I will just keep on reiterating this until I see some tangible improvements.
Yeah, but with Philly, they're just having good shot selection. They're not taking a lot of threes. They know that's not the aim of the game for them. They just did what they knew. They took 21 threes, made 10 of them. So they took the opportunities that they were given to them. They really use Embiid's strength in the paint and that emphasis that he draws on defenses. And they lean into that and they use that advantage that he brings from that attention he draws in the paint. Kick it out just to Seth Curry. Kick it out to Korkmaz. Kick it out to, well,
Shake, big
Shake
shake.
Milton or Danny Green when he was healthy. But just I think that you really can see that that's something that's been coached into them. That's something that you didn't really see from them with Bruce. What was their old coach?
Brett Brown.
Brett Brown. I was supposed to say Bruce Brown. Like, he plays for the Nets.
Brett Brown just like said, go do what you want. Have fun out there. Everyone's a winner.
But they've really improved with that coaching, and I think that if they want to win this game, they're either gonna have to. I mean, what they did in the first game, they let Embiid cook, and they made the other players try and beat him, and they couldn't do that. Or they're gonna have to make it sure that Embiid doesn't draw that attention in the paint by just completely shutting him out, so it doesn't create that threat on the outside. So either they have to go all in or all out on guarding Embiid, and they haven't really been decisive in that decision. And I think that's something that Nate McMillan's gonna have to try and either instill or just. He's gonna have to try it if he's gonna win this series because the Hawks are not out of it yet. They took a game on the road, which was really important for them. They've got another home game coming up. They just gotta really understand that they have the ability to win this series. Like, they're not outclassed in terms of talent. Because Philly rosters is solid at all, but it's easily beatable. Matisse Thybulle, Ben Simmons, they're not great offensively. And when they're on the court together, you can pretty much ignore a lot of their offense because there's not a lot they can do there. And then there's only just a couple of things you got to worry about with Philly's offense. They're not overly dynamic. They're not some
Phoenix team.
Phoenix Suns, exactly. They're not going to beat you a million different ways. They kind of beat you the same way. That's kind of how Philly is. And they'll use that one move and they'll counter off of it. Think of it as like Tennessee Titans. They've got the run game, and if you're going to try to stop the run game, they got the pass game to counter that. So they kind of play complementary basketball. But the Hawks, they got to figure out what they're going to do. Starting Solomon Hill is not the move.
No, not at all.
John Collins has to be more assertive in the paint. I don't know how you're going to use Onyeka. Bruno Fernando, I mean, he played 50 seconds in the fourth. That's kind of a blowout. Bruno, he could be an interesting card to play defensively. I don't know how it would work. It could be an experiment they got to try because there's no harm in experimenting at some point.
Yeah, because Dwight Howard doesn't really have a perimeter game, and he's the backup center.
Yeah, I mean they've got other shooters. You don't. The fact that someone can't shoot doesn't make him impossible to start. Look at Ben Simmons. I mean, if you've got complementary players, I mean, you've got Bogey, you've got Trae Young, you've got Gallo, you've got Huerter, you've got so many people that can shoot that you can make up for the deficiencies of other players, and you can play
Yeah,
real.
look at how they run the offense with Capella, just off straight pick and rolls sometimes.
Yeah, just they gotta use the shooters, and they gotta understand that they can play a different style of basketball. Like they can have two players that can just refuse to shoot threes or shoot at all. Just have two guys in the big guys in the paint. They could even play a two center. I mean, that'd be interesting to see. A two center back of front court. I mean, you gotta try something.
Yeah, they need to do something. Because also having a good rim protector there will force Ben Simmons will basically neutralize Ben Simmons on offense in terms of scoring. So then you're forcing him to pass outside to any of the shooters, and they would know that, so they can just kind of kick out to the they can just shadow all the shooters.
They know the formula that Philadelphia's going to use. They just got to understand how to counter that. So I think that this is something that's coaching. Nate Millen's a solid coach. I mean, look what he did, 34 and 12, 31 and 12, whatever it was.
12, yeah.
He's got to not just be the coach that inspires the players to play well. He's got to be the coach that tells the players how to win a series and how to adapt to a series. And that's something, the reason why he didn't make it in Indianapolis. I mean, he's got to not just be an inspirational, a leader of men. He's also got to be the guy that makes that adjustment to the series offensively and defensively in order to win. So that's kind of where I stand right now. I want the Hawks to pull through. I'm not a Hawks fan, but I do like the Hawks. So I like them in this series. I think they're a more interesting team than Philadelphia. I don't know what would be a better series between Brooklyn, Philly, or Brooklyn, Atlanta. Probably Brooklyn, Philly, if I'm being honest. The Hawks are fun and all, but I don't know how they match up against Brooklyn, especially if they get James Harden.
Do you really think that Solomon Hill can barely guard Ben Simmons? What makes you think he can lock up Kevin Durant?
You got no one that can guard Kevin Durant, man.
Yeah, that's just true.
Ben Simmons could do a good job, though, which is probably what he'll do, hopefully.
He will. He most likely will.
He has to. I mean, what else are they gonna do? And then, but put,
I don't know. Put Shake Milton on him.
I mean, if they Matisse just man defense. Matisse on Irving, you put Ben on Durant. I mean, that's a pretty good system. Then they got James Harden, and it's like, that's crazy, man. How do you stop that?
Let him cook. Just let him cook. Let James Harden do his thing. Give him his first ring. I feel bad at this point. Harden needs a ring.
So let's move on to our last series. We've got Jazz Clippers, and
we got two games.
So let's start off with game two over here. So game two, it was a close one. I forget what the final score was. What was it? 117 to 111. So Utah, I mean, they start off these games very strong. I mean, they've started off these games against the Clippers, the first two games, very hot. And they've put the Clippers in a hole, pretty much, and they've got to dig themselves out of it. I mean, to be fair, the Clippers have done that both games, but... And we saw what happens if they didn't do it in Game 3, and we'll get to that in a second. But they've come out strong, and the shooting of Clarkson, Ingles... I mean, Ingles finally found his form. And Donovan Mitchell has been really, really playing spectacular to see, because all of them have been firing on all cylinders throughout this entire series. I wish I had their series numbers in front of me, but I would imagine they're all shooting plus 40% from behind the arc. Maybe not Joe Ingles, because that first game was pretty awful, but definitely Clarkson and Mitchell have been shooting plus 40 for the series, and Joe Ingles has been shooting plus 50 for the past two games. So that has really been leading the way for them offensively, and has been just the source of a lot of their things. I mean, look at Joe Ingles had a plus 36 net rating in game two.
Plus 36, oh my god.
I mean... He was instrumental. Then you look at the Clippers. What they kind of did, they really dominated in the paint. Like that's where they got all their points, was within the 2 to 4 feet of the basket. And you might be asking, oh, well, how did they do that if they've got Rudy Gobert, the defensive player of the year, 3-time defensive player of the year? I mean, but what they're doing which is a really good offensive adjustment, which I think, I mean, I don't know if I'm crediting Ty Lue or player or someone in the coaching staff, but someone made the adjustment where Zubac and Marcus Morris, the two big men, they don't stand in the paint at all. And you know what that does? Is that allows whenever they're in man defense, that means Rudy Gobert is guarding someone on the perimeter. And when Zubac gets the ball on the perimeter, or Marcus Morris gets the ball on the perimeter, Rudy Gobert has to close out. And what happens when Rudy Gobert close out? He got no change of direction. He's like a tractor out there. He comes out to close out, blow by him, and there's no one in the paint. And they started to really abuse that in game two, but their shooting from three wasn't there. They weren't having anything offensively complementing that. Their mid-range wasn't there. So, and then, man, Utah's hitting from three. They were 50% from three that game, so it was just hard for them to win that game.
D. Mitch, Jesus.
D. Mitch went crazy, but that's why they won that game. And you look at game three, I mean, they didn't shoot as well. I think they shot 43% from three. Still,
Paul George came to play too.
Playoff P, not pandemic P.
No, playoff, he was killing it in game three, and no one wants to give him any credit.
No, 6 of 10 from
Probably on
three.
his downfall at this point. I don't like that. But yeah, playoff P killed it. Coaching was definitely better. They, Kawhi, man. Dude, Kawhi was just playing beautiful basketball. Like, it was insane. And he was on a roll. When he's down 0-2, whether it's in Toronto or whether it's here, he just gets on a mission, and you could tell that the team was rallying around him and Paul George. There was a change in mentality. There was a change in the locker room. And guys like Reggie Jackson, or whether
Man.
it's going to be Luke Kennard next game, just completely stepped up.
Yeah, I mean, they shot lights off on three, and that really just was the difference in them winning this game. You look at, I think with the last two games, I think, I mean, I'm not sure, but I think Reggie Jackson is, I think, what, nine of what, 12 from three?
Yeah, he's been on a roll.
He's been really playing some exceptional basketball, and him and Nick Batum this game, as well as Paul George, that spacing on the 3-point line was so exceptional, and they were able to really dominate this game. They played to their strengths. I mean, what's Rudy Gobert going to come out and defend a 3-pointer? No, he's not. So they just
No.
barraged them from 3-point land. So, I mean, that's something that you look at as something acceptable. I mean, what? They shot 36 threes that game, made 19 of them. I mean, the Jazz, I mean, they're the 3-point heaviest team in the league, I think, at this point, shooting 44.
They're shooting like 10, 11 pull-up threes a game. They're breaking their own 3-point records.
And then something else that the Clippers do really well is they play really great transition basketball, getting numbers on transitions and taking advantage of another thing that Rudy Gobert's not great at is getting down the court. So, just tactically, they're taking advantage of the personnel on the court. And Rudy Gobert's a great player and all, but he's very easily schemed. You can
Yeah,
very easily scheme against Rudy
he's easy to
Gobert.
scheme against in the playoffs. Like Bam Adebayo, you can't. He can guard the perimeter. He has that mobility. He has that athleticism. You don't get that with Rudy Gobert. You get that with Bam. You get that with AD. You get that with Ben Simmons. But you can't really find that kind of versatility with a guy like Rudy Gobert or even a Clint Capella. And that's what gets exploited so much in the playoffs.
Yeah, so just easily game plan around, and the Clippers, I have a hard time not believing they win this series because the Jazz, as much as they've been shooting exceptionally well, and much as their volume, their 3-point shooting has been such an exceptional part of their basketball game, I mean, it doesn't even matter how good their defense is. I mean, they just hit threes. Like, Donovan Mitchell has just been pulling up and hitting on anyone. Like,
Yeah,
even if Kawhi's in
they're.
the perfect position, he's been hitting it. So I think that even though they're hitting on all cylinders, I think the fact that the Clippers have that advantage schematically, that the Jazz have to be perfect from 3-point land to win games. And yes, they were that in game one and two, but that's something that's not sustainable going throughout a series, is being sustainable at a high clip above the beyond the 3-point line, shooting 50% plus. Like, They had to shoot 50%
especially
plus in game one and two to
they're gonna
win.
be away. They don't have that momentum anymore. They lost by 29. That's gonna be tough to recover from. And once again, those teams are basically living or dying by the three. And we've seen how unsustainable that can be with even some of those past Golden State teams. So I think I got the Clips in seven.
I got the Clips in 7-2. I wouldn't actually be surprised if it was 6, but I think that the Jazz
The Jazz will take the home game. We'll take a game at
in
home.
4 games, the Jazz have to have a game shooting 50% again, and if they do that, they're gonna win.
Yeah, they'll do that. Currently the Nets and Bucks are playing right now. Bucks are up 44-43 with 4 minutes left in the second. They just hit a three, so 47-43. So I think that this is their game to win. So they'll win this game, and we will have I think we'll have the Nets in six.
I certainly hope so. I haven't watched this game. Obviously, since we've been recording this, so I don't really know how the game's feeling. I don't know exactly what's happening. All I know is the Bucks, but I've been tracking throughout this recording. So I don't know who's winning this game in like
PJ
fit.
Tucker's playing well. Oh my God.
No, no way.
5 from 3.
PJ Tucker doing offensively? That's a first this
It's
series. Maybe that's why they're winning. Maybe that is
And he
why they're
has an
winning.
assist. No way.
Well, I'll have to rewatch that game for sure to make sure I tell you how PJ Tucker turned from a pedestrian to
Oh,
an
wow.
offensive powerhouse.
Hang on, we got a bombshell. Kyrie heads to the locker room, suffering apparent ankle injury.
All right, so let's talk about that. So that's big.
Yeah, it's
He's
massive.
been playing 45 minutes every game, like 44 or 45 minutes. He's been pretty much the driving force of that team.
Yeah,
Like, as
and
much as Kevin Durant's the best player, Kyrie
he
Irving's the
plays such a
facilitator.
different place. He plays with a lot of ankle. He takes ankles, utilizes them. So this, let's just hope it's like a minor sprain or like he rolled it, something very minor. Because if this turns into he's out for the next few games, I think Milwaukee takes a series for sure.
Easily, because who's stepping up in that role? I mean, James
Like,
Harden can
I
play point guard,
don't
but James Harden's not playing.
Yeah, when you're. That's the one thing about this next team. Their biggest vulnerability is injuries. You're taking three relatively injury-prone players,
Well,
and
Harden
apparently one.
hasn't been that injury prone throughout his career.
Isn't that injury prone throughout his career, but throughout the season, this last year, it's been pretty bad.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, his hamstring thing at first I thought was pretty minor. So I think we'll see him back in decent form if they end up advancing. And I think that part of it is they're going to give him rest too. But if Kyrie is out for the rest of the series, then we got a Milwaukee Philadelphia series. So that kind of leads me into my next prediction.
Suns taking it all? Hold on,
Yeah,
I gotta
yeah.
check something real quick. I gotta check the
Yeah,
lines on
like
that.
if Brooklyn doesn't make the finals, then if Brooklyn is either unhealthy and they make the finals, or they just don't make the finals at all, I got Phoenix winning this pretty easily. And then that solidify does that solidify Chris Paul as a top five? I think it does.
It might.
If they
Right.
win a title, I don't think he's better than Magic or Steph or Isaiah Thomas. But guys like Nash, Stockton, I know there's I don't think he's better than Oscar Robertson. But I think he takes that five spot over like a Nash, Jason Kidd, or John Stockton.
I think definitely he takes a spot over them. I mean, then also right now look at the look looking at the line, the Suns are +480 to win the championship. I
Yeah.
mean, the Sixers are +750, Bucks are +1100,
What's Brooklyn?
+125. They're pretty much 1-1 to win it all. I mean, without two stars,
That all
that all
changes.
changes.
That all changes with Kyrie though. Like, obviously he's in the locker room right now. He might be getting iced up, taped up, but that is a massive blow to Brooklyn right there. So we'll have to see if he does end up returning. But if not, Phoenix, Arizona.
It could
Chris
be.
Chris Paul, Devin Booker. Got yourself a Larry O'Brien.
I would love that.
I love that too. I love Chris Paul. You know that.
Yeah, I love Chris Paul, man. I think all of us, I guess I'd say Hornets fans, love Chris Paul. That's what we were when Chris Paul was there. All my fan pages I follow about the Pelicans, they all just constantly say, just pay him the bag, pay him the blank check.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Paul is exceptional, and as a leader and inspiring a young roster, I mean, I would take it. He would never come back, though, just purely because of the fact that, I mean, we're not a good team, and the Phoenix is incredible. And they've got Monty Williams, we've got Stan Van Gundy, so a little bit of a discrepancy there as well, but Chris Paul.
You guys gave up Monty, Chris Paul, Anthony Davis.
Drew Holiday, I don't want to hear it, man. I don't want to hear it.
You'll get some picks out of that.
We could have had a team consisting of Monty Williams coaching with Drew Holiday, Zion Williamson, and Anthony Davis right now.
Yeah.
Tell me that team's not broken.
And you probably... Wait, who did you trade for Steven Adams?
That wasn't the Drew Holiday trade.
Oh, yeah, it was a multiple-team deal. That's
so
crazy.
That team would be in the conference championship this year. The conference finals this year. Because the West is not great this year.
Imagine how good Chris Paul would be for Zion. That's not even funny to mention.
take how good he was with Blake Griffin. And then Zion is like Blake Griffin... But better.
Not fair.
Would break the NBA.
Have so much fun with that too. I know he'd have a blast with Zion. But
wasn't meant to be.
That's tough.
I think I'll do it for us today, right?
Yeah, that concludes the episode.
We'll get you the latest on the Kyrie injury though. We'll make sure to get you that.
Go Phoenix. And remember, check out the website. We have our 25 under 25 that dropped. Hint, hint, Luka Doncic is number one, to nobody's surprise.
Oh, Sean, how can you be so controversial?
I know, man. Hey, but number two is a little controversial. Number two, honestly, the rest of the list is decently controversial. So I'm definitely excited. I'm very happy that I wrote that, and I think that you guys will love it. And we have a lot of content in the works. Draft lottery's coming up in 9 days. It's on 22nd.
Oh, we'll try to get that one live. That'll be fun to do if we can do that one live.
Yeah, we got to live stream that. That'll be so much fun. Live reactions. I don't think we've ever done like a reaction type thing.
No, I don't think we have.
Yeah, no, we'd get demonetized if you saw my Kyle Pitts reaction.
We also get
shadow banned. We get demonetized from Spotify and YouTube.
We'd also get demonetized during the Zion Williamson lottery.
Yeah, for you.
Yeah, I was a little happy, a little happy.
Yeah, but that's like a good thing. Like, I just make a fool out of myself. Like, Kyle Pitts. My brother walked in, he's like, dude, what's wrong with you? I'm like, we drafted a tight end at 4. A tight end. And you know what he said to me? He's a versatile weapon.
That's the thing. You always hear, oh, he's a weapon, he's a weapon. He's got it. He's a wide receiver, but he plays tight end.
Stop overrating versatility. God, we need to alter the
media.
Yeah,
no, he's versatile. Like, put my quarterback. He's the future. He's the future, man.
Yep, for sure. Well, Bucks are up 6 right now. Almost halftime. But that'll do it. Remember, we got a lot of content coming up. Check out our website, and I think we'll get the Patreon up eventually.
For sure.
But alongside me, Willie Mizell, I'm Ishan Cheth. That'll do it for the Triple Threat Podcast today. Peace.
Prayers for Christian Erickson.